The noblest question in the world is, what good may I do in it? Written by Benjamin Franklin, perhaps this phrase best sums up his life and his incredible gifts and service to humanity. A fire of ambition burned within him that kept him always learning, always thinking, always studying the world around him. Benjamin, as a boy and as a man, had a fierce desire to improve not only his own life, but also the lives of those around him, as you will soon see. Born in 1706 as the 15th child and youngest son, he had two younger sisters, there was very little money for Benjamin to attend school. During the 2 years he did have at school, he excelled and moved quickly to the head of the class. However, he was removed from school at 10 years old to work in the family soap and candle shop in Boston, the city his father had immigrated to from England 33 years previous. Young Benjamin despised the work of candle and soap making. So, when he was 10 years old, his father arranged for him to be an apprentice to his older brother who owned a print shop. The print shop was where Benjamin greatly enhanced his education. Yes, there was the hands-on learning to run a print shop, but his brother also sold books by various authors on a multitude of subjects. After his day's work was done, Benjamin often took a book off the store shelf and stayed up much of the night reading, returning it in the morning so it would not be missed. Benjamin later explained how he worked on his writing skills by using magazine articles. I took some of the papers and, making short hints of the sentiment in each sentence, laid them by a few days and then, without looking at the book, tried to complete the papers again by expressing each hinted sentiment at length and as fully as it had been expressed before in any suitable words that should come to hand. Then I compared my attempt with the original, discovered some of my faults, and corrected them. He became so confident in his writing that at 16 years old, he began writing anonymous articles and slipping them under the door of the print shop. Assuming they were written by some clever, knowledgeable adult in the community, Benjamin's brother printed the articles until he learned they had been written by his little brother. He then refused to print any more of Benjamin's articles. The two brothers did not get along. Benjamin's brother would beat him, which Benjamin greatly resented. At 17 years old, Benjamin sold some of his own books, and with very little money, he ran away on a boat to New York, 300 miles from his home, looking for work in a print shop. Because there was no work to be found in New York, however, a printer encouraged him to seek an apprenticeship in Philadelphia. Upon arriving in Philadelphia, covered in dirt and mud, his pockets stuffed with his only extra clothing, he took his one Dutch dollar and bought three large puffy rolls from a bakery. As he walked down the street, filthy, with a roll tucked under each arm and eating the third, what a sight he must have been. He saw a young woman, Deborah Reed, who laughed at the sight of him. That young woman later became his wife. Having his fill on one of the rolls, he gave the other two to a woman and her child whom he met on the street. Benjamin did not know a soul in Philadelphia, but after asking around, he finally found a printer, Samuel Kamer, who was in great need of an apprentice. Mr. Kamer was just setting up. He had equipment that was run down and that he didn't know how to operate. Benjamin, though still just a boy, knew a great deal more than Mr. Kamer and proved to be a great asset to the printer. Benjamin was set up with room and board at the Reed home, where a romance ensued between himself and Deborah. The governor of Pennsylvania began to take notice of the young printer and invited him to dinner often. The governor saw a need for a talented printer and encouraged Benjamin to start a press of his own. He told Benjamin to sail to London to purchase printing equipment, promising to send the necessary letters of recommendation and money to pay Benjamin's expenses. Leaving Deborah with the promise of marriage upon his return, Benjamin boarded a ship to London. The journey was long and took weeks to arrive in England. Sadly, he realized the governor of Pennsylvania was a man of empty promises and had sent no money nor letters for Benjamin. The poor young man was stuck in London with very little money and very few friends. He decided to find work at a printing press and learn all he could before returning to America. At the print shop, the men drank a lot of beer to make themselves strong, they said. Benjamin drank only water, so they called him the Water American. When Benjamin was able to carry two large boxes of heavy type, one in each hand, up some stairs, the other men were astounded at his strength. Benjamin convinced some of them to eat porridge for breakfast instead of bread, cheese, and beer. The men who followed his advice found they could work much better, and they saved money as well. Benjamin found London exciting. The intellectual stimulation he found there was enlivening. However, he wrote to Deborah only once, a cold letter, to tell her he would not soon be returning. He later recalled that letter as one of the greatest errors of his life, one he would have liked to correct given the chance to relive it. The theater and various amusements, including books, soaked up his time and money, and he found himself always without enough for his passage back to America. In October of 1726, nearly 2 years after he left, 20-year-old Benjamin returned to Philadelphia with the help of a friend. On his journey home, he wrote out a plan of conduct for himself, which included the following. 1. It is necessary for me to be extremely frugal till I have paid what I owe. 2. To apply myself industriously to whatever business I take in hand, and not divert my mind from my business by any foolish project of growing suddenly rich, for industry and patience are the surest means of plenty. Benjamin also made a list of 13 virtues needed to be a good civic leader. Benjamin created a chart for himself to track how well he did each week with the 13 virtues, always striving for improvement. While employed in a Philadelphia printing house, Benjamin started the Leather Apron Club, a group of shopkeepers who wanted to improve themselves, their businesses, and their influence in society. They practiced speaking professionally, and they made lists of ways they could improve the community. And out of these ideas sprang many improvements to Pennsylvania. Members of the club decided to pool their books together in one place for the benefit of each member. Benjamin Franklin then had an idea that would expand reading and learning to the entire community. He began a system where most anyone could borrow books to take home and read. Thus was born the first public library. Benjamin soon took over the print shop of Kamer, his first employer in Philadelphia. He started a fresh new paper that he named the Pennsylvania Gazette, which had a flair of spunk, freedom, wit, and humor. It was unique because it published articles written by common citizens, many of which were written by Benjamin Franklin himself under a number of fake names or pseudonyms. Benjamin then began publishing Poor Richard's Almanac, a yearly publication that he wrote under the pseudonym of Poor Richard. From this almanac came many sayings still known and used today. Perhaps you recognize some. Early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. No gains without pains. God helps them that help themselves. The young entrepreneur decided a postal system was needed to get his newspapers and almanacs to people. So he helped create the postal system for the colonies. At 31 years old, he was made the postmaster of Philadelphia. To further improve the city, he helped start a police department and a fire department. His desire to improve life for all led him to have many of the streets lighted and paved, and then he kept them clean by creating a street cleaning department. He also helped start the first hospital in Philadelphia, a high school which later became the University of Pennsylvania, and even proposed life insurance for widows to ease their suffering. Speaking of widows, Deborah Reed had married while Benjamin was in London, but her husband had taken all their money and run away, never to be heard from again. Some suspected he had died, but no one knew. Because she was already married, laws prevented her from marrying again, so she and Benjamin entered into a common law marriage. He brought into the relationship his small son born out of wedlock, William, who was followed by two more children with Deborah, a boy who died of smallpox at age 4, and a girl, Sally, who ended up taking care of her father in his old age. At the age of 42, having become a very wealthy man from his printing business, Benjamin turned his focus to science, namely the study of electricity. He published many of his experiments in the Pennsylvania Gazette. In his most famous experiment, he tied a lead wire to the top of a kite and a key to the string and flew it during a storm. The wire attracted the ambient electricity, spreading the threads of the string and electrifying the key. This led to his invention of the lightning rod. He found that if a building had a tall metal rod, the static electricity in the clouds was attracted to it and then could flow down into the ground rather than striking the building, which was usually devastating. Many churches, hospitals, and especially lives were saved because of this invention. Not one of Benjamin's inventions did he patent, believing they should be shared for the good and enjoyment of everyone in the world. He invented many other interesting and useful items. The Franklin stove, which heated homes much more efficiently than traditional stoves of the time. Bifocals, and the glass harmonica, an instrument inspired by people in England who made music by running their fingers over the rims of partially filled glasses. Mozart and Beethoven both composed music for the harmonica. Franklin became famous throughout the colonies and in scientific circles all over Europe due to his research and discoveries. He was given honorary degrees from Yale and Harvard, as well as prestigious universities in England and Scotland. He was therefore often referred to as Dr. Franklin. In 1754, Dr. Franklin was appointed to the Continental Congress as a Pennsylvania commissioner. Thus began his political career. About a year later, he was appointed commander-in-chief of 170 men to protect Pennsylvania from attacks by Native Americans and the French. His son William was his aide-de-camp. They led the militia in building several forts. When he saw the men lazy about participating in prayer services, he had rum withheld from those who did not participate. Attendance at prayer meetings rose dramatically. Dr. Franklin became an American diplomat to England and spent a great deal of time there over the next 20 years. He was the voice of the American colonies in London. Being friends with many people of high importance, he came to be highly respected in England. He was once summoned to testify in front of Parliament, and when asked if military force would be required to enforce the Stamp Act, Franklin replied, "Suppose a military force sent into America. They will find nobody in arms. What are they then to do? They cannot force a man to take stamps who chooses to do without them. They will not find a rebellion. They may indeed make one." Instead of taking Franklin's words to heart, the members of Parliament mocked and humiliated him. That was the moment that tipped him to believe, despite all his efforts to avert it, that the colonies needed a revolution to break away from the British government. In 1775, he left England, returned to the colonies, and announced his decision to join the American movement toward independence. Dr. Franklin was one of the most pivotal members of the Second Continental Congress. He served on a 5-member committee to draft and edit the Declaration of Independence. And his wit and practical nature eased tensions and cooled tempers many times during the sometimes contentious discussions. He is the only founding father who signed all 4 of the primary documents of the founding of the United States, which, in addition to the Declaration of Independence, also include the Treaty of Alliance with France, the Treaty of Paris, and the United States Constitution. Benjamin Franklin's role as the ambassador in France during the War for Independence was crucial for gaining French support in the fight against Britain. The colonies needed French troops, French gunpowder, and French money. The French loved him, the renowned scientist that he was. So Americans received French support in the war, including their aid in winning a decisive victory at the Battle of Yorktown, due to the efforts of Dr. Franklin. Some estimates say that 90% of the muskets and all the gunpowder the colonists were carrying by the end of the war were French. It is often suggested that the war would not have been won without Dr. Franklin. Benjamin Franklin had an outsized influence on the early direction of our country, and his contributions during the Revolutionary War and the forming of our founding documents cannot be thought of too highly. We often do not realize, though, that Benjamin Franklin is still affecting our lives today through some of the important things he created. Do you go to a library? Do you feel safer because firefighters are there to defend your home? Is your house safe from lightning? These are just a few of the practical ways Benjamin Franklin's legacy lives on even today. Benjamin Franklin believed that the sign of a successful person was not having a fancy home or the latest clothing, but rather a person's ability to give back to the community. He said it was through serving others that one achieved happiness. He said to his mother, "I'd rather have it said of me that he lived usefully than that he died rich. And I believe that the best way to be in favor of the good Lord is to do things for all of his fellow creatures that he created."